Welcome, everyone. I'm Dale Coolis, and you're tuning into the Friday edition of the Berkshire Hathaway podcast. And today we have on Realtor Ben Olson, and he'll be with us today right after this.
Life, with its many stages, from the my little one has just arrived stage to the I have arrived stage, from the first home you'll ever buy to the one home you'll have forever. No matter where you find yourself in life, your forever agent will be there. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. For you, for life. Life.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We are here today with realty expert Ben Olson. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday. It's the day.
Yes. Weekend Weekend is here. I'm stoked for it. When we last left you on Wednesday, you're traveling to Michigan there. Had a big travel day ahead of you. Some big, how did everything go there?
Yep. Michigan, North Dakota, by the way.
Michigan, North Dakota. Yes. Correction. Yep. Yes.
So I went out to Michigan and it went good. They bought the house. And oh. I actually got a call from the agent before this that they accepted the offer. Go. So yeah, it's great. So yeah, I'm excited.
Heck yeah. Can't go wrong with that.
These guys are from Oregon, the state of Oregon. So, I mean, that's pretty far out there. And to be able to come to North Dakota and really enjoy a place like Michigan, which, you know, is in Nelson County. So it's like a very rural, you know, area, you know, when you think about it. Nelson County is one of the most sparsely populated counties in the country.
Yes, it's like really smallly spread out, right?
Very spread out, yes. Very big county, so.
And I remember just hearing you talk to John on Wednesday, just kind of just that nice rural lifestyle. Just can't got like have that peace and solitude, kind of know everybody.
And this house that they're getting is a ranch-style home with a Quonset on some acreage, so it's perfect for, you know, having tons of space, tons of extra breathing room. And then the house itself is actually really cool. It's from like the 1960s, 1970s. It has a lot of the original fixtures and features, which is, I mean, you know, linoleum may not be your style, but it's in great shape. So stuff like that really makes a difference for buyers is that that house, even though it's older, it's move-in ready. So that's really, really attractive to people nowadays.
Awesome. Congratulations on the sale.
Thank you.
Glad it went good. I know we're kind of talking a little bit before we went on the air here, and one of the big topics for today is, you know, it sounds like the market's doing really good right now, even though there may be some little bit of speculation, but nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's always something to worry about because you never know. But, you know, as a realtor, I hate to say that there will never be a crash. But at the same time, I just don't see the market predictors right now of there being one. Right now, we're seeing home prices at the highest they've been in 7 years. We're seeing the amount of inventory, one of the lowest it's been in 7 years. So when we're kind of looking at the data, it kind of shows that we're actually in a really strong area for a home market right now. The big problem with 2008 that everyone forgets is that that was caused by a bunch of subprime mortgage lending, right? They were lending to people who could never afford the house that they were buying, and they did it anyway, right? I mean, that was part of the reason why there were so many foreclosures and a collapse in 2008 in the real estate market. Well, since then, there's been a lot of federal regulation, a lot of oversight that goes into the banking industry and the approval process. So banks are actually very strict now on how they pre-approve people. And so, you know, like we were talking about before the show, you know, I don't really see a lot of foreclosures coming on the market unless we see a big reason why people lose their jobs and can't make their payments. But what we saw over the pandemic is that foreclosures actually kept going down because obviously there's a moratorium on foreclosures and evictions. So it's going to be really interesting to see without that, you know, what this market's going to have in store for us. But right now it's showing signs of strength. So,
and just being a 2008 being a big learning experience. So they make sure to have more safeguards in place so that foreclosure is presumably a whole last resort kind of thing. So they have time to catch up on those debts.
Right. And that was the nice thing about the forbearance, I guess, kind of during the COVID crisis, that when people did fall behind their mortgage, they were given a chance to catch up. Well, it's been almost a year now since foreclosures have resumed. So, and we haven't seen a lot. I mean, we've seen some pop up, you know, some that were probably in mortgage, you know, problems way before the pandemic even, because I remember I had a listing before the pandemic, and then it got under contract during the pandemic. And it was really hard because they, the bank was saying, well, we're not doing foreclosures right now. And it's like, well, these people want to sell. They want to do a short sale, which is kind of like a foreclosure. So those are things that you can do in lieu of foreclosure. People don't really talk about that so much. And maybe that's something I should bring up now is, you know, a short sale is a great alternative to letting your house go into foreclosure and going to the bank, right? I mean, if you're severely behind on your payments and they are sending you collection letters and they are saying, we are going to foreclose, it might be a really good time to talk to a realtor, because at that point, we can contact the bank and work with you to get the house listed as a short sale so that you may not walk away with any money, but it affects your credit situation and your ability to buy a home a lot less. So this happened to a client of mine a couple years ago, right before the pandemic, and they ended up selling their house for quite a bit less than what they paid for it. And because of, you know, other debt situations and things like that, they were just really hard for money. So we ended up selling it, getting under contract, you know, getting rid of it. And they were actually able to buy another house within 2 years because they did the short sale process versus the foreclosure process.
Well, that's cool. Sounds like, you know, like you mentioned, their clients may not be aware of all these other like, kind of like secondary options before getting all thinking about doom and gloom foreclosure. There's all these nice kind of like alternative ways to, you know, make something out of it. And like you said, it sounds like they came out of the way with a new home.
Yep. And they did. And they moved states too. So, I mean, that was really nice too, is that they moved to a different state and were able to, you know, buy a piece of land, do what they needed to do, which in 2 years is great versus, you know, having to rent for like 5 years or 7 years after a foreclosure. So I think that's really important. And there's so many options. And the great thing about there being low inventory is that there's a really good opportunity to sell unique or distressed properties, right? I mean, if your property is just not where it normally should be or where it really should be, now is actually a better time to sell because people are looking for those type of investments.
Nice. And like, how often is it when you have clients that come to you in situations like these where they're thinking foreclosure and you kind of go over all these list of options, they're surprised and they're like all the many ways and resources you have available to go, hey, no need to start sweating this right away. Let's go over this stuff.
Right. And it's really just about starting the paperwork process, starting the paper trail. You know, obviously like getting showing that you're motivated to sell to a bank that wants, you know, that basically you want to do short sale with is really important. It's kind of hard sometimes because like the deal I had, you had to basically get the entire offer together, signed, agreed to everything, and then you had to submit everything, which is kind of scary because you don't know if the bank's going to approve it or not, right? And you got a buyer just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. And so what if they get cold feet and walk away because they don't want to wait? And, you know, and that's one thing that some people who wait do end up, you know, getting a better deal. This house in particular was a really good deal for the person who bought it because it ended up being, you know, 5 bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms. It had all the room that they needed for a really low price because obviously they couldn't get what they were thinking out of it in the first place. So,
and I imagine this is almost a situation with so many potential buyers that and sellers, you know, waiting to get, you know, the better deal. Everyone likes a deal, of course. So if it comes down to it, would you advise more often, or what do you find yourself typically doing, advising more to hold out, wait, see what happens, or if there's other competing offers, maybe good to jump on it a little more often? Or I guess this all depends on the listing.
It really depends on the listing. Yeah. I mean, I tell people, you know, one thing that one of my mentors at Berkshire Hathaway always says is you got to ask your clients, do you like it, do you love it, or do you got to have it, right? And that really puts you in the category of how strong you need to offer, how forceful you need to be when you're trying to go into those multiple offer situations. But the nice thing now with things kind of cooling off, with mortgages interest rates going up, one of the benefits is because there's more supply, right? Things aren't going as fast or as crazy as they were before. And part of that is because it's fall, you know, we're going into the fall months and we're going to see a downturn in activity. It just is normal, natural type of seasonal activity. But I think people are going to find a better opportunity to find some good deals this fall because you're really going to be able to get down to the nitty gritty of it. You know, you're going to be able to really, you know, like find the house that you think is important. Even though inventories are going lower, buyers also don't want to move as much in the winter either. So it's like some good opportunity there to find something really unique.
So typically a slower, because obviously up here in the good, great white north, it's not many people ideally want to move in the wintertime. I've helped a friend move in the wintertime before. It's no fun experience, but maybe that's like I said, the best time to get a good deal.
Well, yeah, you never know. And so I think that my philosophy is it really depends on your timeline. You know, if you're looking to move right away or you're looking to get things going, then, you know, you kind of got to make a decision, you know, and like even with the limited inventory, you kind of got to look at what you have and say yes, no, and move on. You know, you have to be a little more decisive than in the past, which I think is a good thing because it really forces people to not wait around and not miss those good deals. I mean, I don't, I, when I tell, when I know something's a good deal, I will tell my client, this is a good deal. Like price per square foot, you're getting a good deal. Comps are a good deal. Like if you fix it up, it'll be a good deal. Like I'll tell them my opinion of it. That's part of my job is, you know, to be honest and to show, tell them, hey, you know, in 5 years, if you fix this place up, I'm not saying you're going to make a huge profit depending on what you put in, but you're not going to be necessarily underwater on it. Like you're going to have a place that actually is decent. So
over time,
right. Or whatever their goals are. I mean, with a lot of people who want to downsize, people who have these big houses who are going to move into, you know, a condo town home or anything like that. That's a great option for people too. You know, is when you're ready to downsize, do it sooner than later. There are people waiting for your 5-bedroom home if you're an empty nester. I mean, there are people waiting for that type of real estate to come up.
I think I'm not quite positive on that term empty nester. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Just somebody, let's say that you know all your kids are gone, or it's just a one person or two people in like a 5-bedroom house.
Oh, okay,
or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously, it's this less people, more people move out. It's this, all right, I don't need all this space.
Three kids move to college, and you're looking around going, I don't need 5 bedrooms. I could go down to 3. Then maybe that's something you should think of. You know, and you never know what you can get for now. And obviously, you're gonna have a little bit more challenge on the buying side. But, obviously if you're taking equity from your home and you're able to put 20% down and kind of flex your muscle a little bit with your equity, then you should be fine, right? Those move down buyers are going to be totally fine. It's the move up buyers that are really seeing a crunch. And really the biggest thing is we're not seeing new builds. I wish I would convince anyone if I could right now, or even myself, like when I was, choosing to go to college 8 years ago, maybe I wouldn't have went to college and went into trade school and did home building, because there's a shortage of home building right now. I mean, there's just not enough home builders out there who are willing to do it. And I think that people are worried about the home building process too, because of materials and costs. And so that's preventing more new builds.
I was just going to bring that up. They're feeling the spider web effect of just the shortage of everything going on.
Yeah, and obviously, supply chains and all that, but really what it comes down to is the fact that there's just not enough new builds coming up. We're still having a record number. I mean, that's what's crazy is year over year, we're still building a record number of new homes every year in the United States, but we're still not enough, right? We still need people to build just regular 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom homes, right? I mean, we need people to build more standard housing, and that's just not what's being built. It's always, bigger and better, and which isn't bad, but it just pushes the price point up for new homes dramatically,
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of things to keep our eye on. Hopefully things pick up and get better. Now, a couple fun things you got going on this weekend we're kind of talking about right before we went on the air here. I was kind of curious on how the Potato Bowl Parade, heard you guys talking to Caitlin last week. She drove the van. How did that go?
Everything looked really good. Yep, everything looked really good. It was really fun, and I think that there's a lot of people who turned out to the parade too, so it was a really good event for them. I wasn't able to be there, unfortunately, but they had a great time. And then coming up on October 23rd or 31st rather, on Halloween, we'll be having Trunk or Treat at the office, so that'll be really fun to have a bunch of people out, come bring your kids in their costumes. And normally it's from about 4 to 7, so I think that's normally what the time is for that. But yeah, you can swing by, take your kids for trick-or-treating. You don't have to go walk around the neighborhood in the dark.
Yeah, it seems like that's been the big kind of evolution for Halloween the last decade or so. The trunk-or-treats are kind of like in the mall here, or
yes,
other
the
public
mall has
spaces.
The mall has a great Halloween here too, so I think that that's something that's really important to recognize, that there's a lot of great events that are happening in the community that something that we like to be a part of too. We had our hot dogs and what was it, Barking at Berkshire a couple weeks ago. So we had hot dogs and dogs were there, and actual dogs, so that was fun. And it was a really nice event. We had basically a whole bunch of different organizations there, Turtle Mountain Animal Rescue. We had the Red Hundred Lounge. So it's just something really fun that we like to do to get out in the community and talk to new people and obviously have these type of conversations. How's the market? People ask me all the time, Ben, how's the market? I say it's great. Right now, especially, it's great. So just something that the more message we can get out to people and tell them about what we do and what we can help with, I think it's more important.
It's a nice side effect, being nice ways, like you mentioned, just keep networking, stay in contact with everyone, keep spreading how things are going.
And a low pressure environment for buyers and sellers to talk to you, right? I mean, I don't want I know what I can do to help buyers and sellers, but I'm also not the person who's going to hammer a buyer or a seller, right? So it's nice to be able to sit there and just have a conversation about real estate really casually and talk about, you know, the market, and then let them make the decision about if they want to go with you or if they want to go with a different agent, right? I think that that's been my most successful tool, is just giving the people the information. And if they trust me and like what I have to say and agree with it, then they usually go with me, right? There's some times where I have a disagreement with, you know, clients or people, and that happens. I mean, that's just, we don't always, you know, agree on a strategy to sell something, you know, and that's totally fine. I just think it's really, really cool to see how you can interact with buyers and sellers and make their dreams work. So
absolutely. Always all kinds. I always love hearing about all the awesome events you guys have going on. So before we wrap up today with you, Ben Olson, what's the best way for everyone to reach out and contact you?
Really easy. Just 701-318-2676.
All right, there you go. And that wraps up your Friday edition of the Berkshire Hathaway podcast. Many thanks to Ben Olson for joining us today, and many thanks to producer Katie. We'll be back with the next Berkshire Hathaway podcast Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Until then, have a good weekend, and goodbye for now.